You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
So, my name is Te Porter, as I mentioned, and I'm all yours to listen to how you'd like to guide this corridor.
Fantastic.
And we'll give you some insight as to the types of things that I will incorporate into the corridor based on where our kaupapa campaign is currently at. Is that okay?
That's fantastic.
Fabulous. You just let me know brief-wise, sound check-wise.
Yeah, so just to check the levels, could I just get your name again and your role in the organisation?
Okay. My name is Te Porter Stevens. The Stevens is with a PH, not a V.
Yeah.
My role is I am part of the inner sanctum, if you should say. When you speak of roles, it's a difficult one to pin down because we are wearing a whole host of pōtai hats at the moment. So we're just picking up where we need to pick up, given that we're sleep deprived. I guess to give you some credence is, and I don't want to talk about myself. I've been involved in Indigenous campaigns, more so on an occupation level regarding land disputes before I returned to New Zealand. So I've lived in Australia for 24 years and lived in London for 4 years. The London sojourn meant that I used London as a base to travel the world extensively and work closely with Indigenous communities. So shortly before I embarked on my return home permanently, I was given the mandate to run an Aboriginal embassy or occupation in the heart of Sydney, the result of which, after a 2.5 year campaign, we achieved the victory, which was to save the whenua in the heart of Sydney from a development that didn't incorporate affordable housing for Aboriginal people. So that was a bit exciting.
Yeah.
Although, as you may doubt understand, there are a lot of challenges that come with that. So on the basis of that, I returned home to New Zealand and immediately liaised with the likes of Pānia and whoever was involved at that time in 2015 with the investigations, research, and where to next with saving this land. So yes, I came on board, had conversations, and suggested, look, let's get an occupation happening. So they got all the communications happening outside of me. Yes, the cousins, Pānia, and some stalwart ahikā agreed, yes, we're going to do this, we're going to get an occupation. Then I came, in a physical sense, assisted with the inception of the occupation, or occupying the space, so to speak, and have been there since, which is, on a physical sense, November the 6th, I appeared, although November the 4th was the official date of the setup for holding space, or occupation, as is commonly known. And I've been shifting in and out of this space based on the fact I don't live here, but I whakapapa to the Tainui Waka, which is the whole reasoning behind us saving this land, is based on the migration of our people over 1,000 years ago to these lands.
Can we talk about the history of the land a bit? What makes this land so special, so worthy of saving?
Okay, so what makes this land so special is based on the migration of Māori to Te Ika a Māui me Te Waka a Māui. So what I'm speaking about there is the islands that incorporate these lands, they weren't inhabited before the early arrival of Māori. So over 1,000 years ago, the migratory journey of Māori commenced when the Tainui Waka, which was captained by Hoturoa, left Hawaiki to find new lands due to the fact that Hawaiki was subjected to climate change. So that was over 1,000 years ago. When that decision was made for the Painui Waka to leave on its migration, the decision was also made that the tohunga, or the high priest of the hapu of Hōturoa, wouldn't be allowed to travel on that journey. The reason being is the journey would be a long, arduous journey. Hence, only the most able-bodied were able to travel, given they'd need to endure a long, arduous journey. So, Hape, being the high priest, or tohunga, as we call him, the decision was made that he wouldn't travel because his feet were interned, or club-footed, as it's called. He wasn't aware that he wouldn't be travelling, but his brothers tricked him, and they blocked the holes in his home, or whare. So in first light, which is when the waka was due to leave, he wouldn't be aware that it was daytime. When he eventually did awaken and exit his whare, thinking it was still nighttime, he then saw the Painui Waka disappearing on the horizon. Having witnessed that, deeply grieved for his wife and family, he lamented and set karakia out to tangaroa, or prayers out to the god of the seas, tangaroa. Tangaroa responded by changing the volume of the ocean, and it became quite tumultuous. On the back of one of the big waves that washed in to the shore of Hawaiki came a big feke, a giant feke. Feke is a stingray. This stingray in particular, being kai whare, landed on the shore where Hape lamented, commanded Hape to climb upon its back, and proceeded to take Hape off on a journey. Hape maintained his lament, continuing his karakia, or incantation, whilst on the back of kai whare. Hape awoke from his incantation or karakia on the shore of the Manukau Harbour, which is outside the Otuatawa stone fields that we know today. Where he awoke, a puna, a spring, a freshwater spring, arose, which assisted with hydrating him. After hydrating, he made his way onto the land, surveying the land, and came across a maunga which is extremely sacred today. That maunga is called Pokitā Papatanga Ahape, or shortened today, named Pokitā Papa. From the top of Pokitā Papatanga Ahape, he rested inside the crater of that maunga, which is a volcano, and set about more karakia to the gods. He then came down from Pokitā Papatanga Ahape, which means the resting place of Hape, continued to survey the land, and went as far north to the highest point. Today, that point is known as K Road. From the top of that range, he viewed the Tainui Waka coming in from the east coast, Hōturoa, the captain of which, recognised that Hape was standing upon that mountain ridge. Embarrassed, they began to follow the image of Hape standing above. Hape put out a call, or what we call a karanga, to guide the Tainui Waka in through to the Waitemate Harbour, where it stopped at Otahuhu. At Otahuhu, they portaged the waka overturning it, carrying it overland to the Manukau Harbour, and continued paddling into where Hape had first arrived with Kaiwhare. So that kōrero that I've given you is a pūrākau, or as some might put it, cosmogony, or the story about how Māori arrived on the Tainui Waka on the shores of Tamaki Makaurau. That is a significant kōrero. There are other versions, but they all direct themselves towards Hape. So whilst I speak of Hape and the call that Hape put out to the Tainui Waka, the spot in which that karanga was given, as I've mentioned, is Kay Road, perhaps the most infamous, well-known road in all of New Zealand today. Significant that that road is called Karanga Hape, the call of Hape. That's how it got its name. And that's to do with Ihu Mātau. So yes, it's significant to the people of Ihu Mātau, or Te Wai Ohua is the name of the hape, of the, hapu, belonging to Ihu Mātau. Hapu is a word that we use to express the original people of a particular area. So there's hapu and iri in this case, the hapu being Te Wai Ohua, being the water of the nose, or the water, and also the hupe, or Te Wai Ohua, yes, the water of the lands.
And since, how did colonisation affect the land?
How did colonisation affect,
Affect the land? So what happened?
What took place from that point with the migration of our people on the Tainui Waka? They brought with them root vegetables, things such as kumara, taro, iriwe, or potato, so that they could re-establish their marakai, or vegetables. They recognised that the land was extremely fertile, being volcanic soil. So once they established themselves at Ihu Mātau, they planted vegetables all throughout the land, which is currently at threat from the development. So the acreages that Fletcher deemed to develop and build 480 houses for what the council say is to meet the housing needs of the growing size of Auckland, all of that land was once vegetables that fed all of Auckland or Tamaki Makaurau back in those times when there weren't a lot of concrete jungle structures, but the early arrival of invaders or settlers, as is commonly known throughout the history books, with the early advent of invaders, the colonisation or assimilation that took place during that early invasion meant that people were driven from their lands, a form of gentrification, being the mana whenua, or the people of Te Wai Ohua, were removed from their lands because Governor Grey arrived and said, part of a proclamation, you are to cede your sovereignty to us, or we will embark war and we will remove your lands. The decision was made that we wouldn't cede our sovereignty. So then the Waikato Wars commenced, which flushed our people off the lands and outside to what was considered rubbish land outside of Ihu Mātau. So to a neighbouring piece of land that wasn't considered the healthy land. So how colonisation has impacted on that history is there hasn't been any growing of vegetables on that land ever since Governor Gray's people invaded back in 1863. What has happened on the land is the complete quarrying of our sacred maunga. For example, one of those is Maunga Taketake, quite a prominent maunga or mountain, which is completely quarried flat. That is an example of some of the desecration that has taken place.
Mm.
Other desecration that has taken place as a result of colonisation is one of the worst dye spills in New Zealand history, which took place in the Oruarangi Awa, or the River Oruarangi, which feeds directly into the Manukau Harbour in Ihu Mātou. The dye spill, which took place on behalf of one of the companies who've established themselves in the industrial estate, which is on the perimeter of the Papakāinga or village. They leached dye constantly into the river, releasing all those toxins, which killed all fish life, which meant our tuna or eels no longer swam. All the fish were killed. All life in the Oruarangi River died. Another example of the desecration as a result of colonisation has also been the implementation of the oxidation and sewage treatment plant on the island just off Ihu Mātou. Today that island is called Puketutu Island. With the oxidation plant or biosolids which are treated there, and the water sewage treatment plant, which service all of Auckland, that too had an impact on the fish life and the kaimoana, which is growing, which exists within what we call the food basket of Manukau, that brought an end to our people being able to live sustainably from the fish and seafood that they gathered and used to feed all people of Auckland, in addition to the vegetables that they grew. So this is not too long ago, although there is a major campaign that Watercare, in addition to Auckland Council, have embarked on to recreate the landscape on Puketutu, based on the fact that they have quarried significantly the landscape of Puketutu. So I've given you examples of the impacts of colonisation. It does run deeper. It runs so deep that our people of Ihu Mātou were restrained and restricted from continuing their ancient Māori cultural practices. An example of which I'll give, here at Ihu Mātou, for what people consider is the mainland, the North Island. At Ihu Mātou, within the stone fields, is a native cucumber. It is the only place on the North Island mainland, or Tika or Maui, where that native cucumber still grows. It is called the mawhai. The mawhai, however, which was used significantly by our people for things such as food preparation and orongua, or medicine, we no longer know how to prepare for the ingestion of the mawhai based on various acts and legislation, for example, Native Land Act, Tohunga Suppression Act. These are pieces of legislation that were introduced to prevent our people from continuing the practices of old and to continue, for example, our native language, which then impacts on our identity, things relating to things such as tikanga and whakapapa. So I've just really given you a snapshot of the impacts of colonisation on the land, but because we say things such as ko au te whenua, ko te whenua, ko au, which means I am the land is me. So when you speak of the impacts of colonisation on the land, it just impacts on us based on Mother Earth, who we refer to as Papa Tuanuku. Papa Tuanuku being our Mother Earth, who sustains and endures and allows us to live a healthy existence through our living sustainably off all that she provides.
And now Fletcher has plans to build on the land, and in an effort to stop this, you had a National Day of Action on Friday.
Absolutely.
Can you tell me a bit about this?
Absolutely. Exciting times. It was something that we had considered quite some time ago, in actual fact. So over a year ago, we had embarked on actions on the doorstep or the frontage of Fletcher's Auckland Penrose headquarters. We have had actions there, but we spoke and discussed in a little bit more detail transferring those actions to all the headquarters of Fletcher's throughout New Zealand, some of which include Otepoti, which is Dunedin, Otautahi, Christchurch, Whanganui Atara, Wellington, Taupō, Tauranga, Kirikiriroa, Hamilton, Tamaki Makaurau, Auckland, and Whangarei. So there was early discussion about transferring those actions on a broader scale to put some early pressure on the developer to garner them closer so we could have conversations with them so that they could understand, hopefully, the perspective of Wairuatanga and spiritual connectedness that we have. That didn't happen. So a decision was made just a short time ago that we would, in actual fact, engage in that type of action. There's been a lot of preparation that took place behind the scenes, which involved tapping into our support networks, who are quite broad now, nationwide, but also globally. So our support networks came on board and said, we will assist you in whichever of those centres around Aotearoa are headquarters of Fletcher's. So the excitement of making that happen also allowed us to identify of our support networks the demographic of those people. Who are they? We recognised and identified that they're not only Māori, they are in actual fact Pākehā, our treaty partners. People of all different ethnicities, ages, creed and religions. For example, our Chinese community have been very strong in their presence. Rangatahi groups, whether they're youth of Pākehā, Māori, Pacifica, Polynesian, Middle Eastern, we don't stereotype. People are people for us, and we recognise very early that we have a wealth of people who are ready to shift and support us any way possible, which so excitedly came about on our National Day of Actions, which included Otepoti, Dunedin, We had a fabulous team of supporters who gathered there at the offices of Fletcher and made a lot of noise, but maintained a peaceful, passive action at the frontage of Fletcher's in Dunedin. Whanganui Atara was extremely busy. The Fletcher's office there were bombarded with song, with barbecues, with singing, as I mentioned, song, and lots of youth, majority of who come from other organised community groups who are not Māori-led, who are in fact good treaty partners and agree and support the notion of ensuring the land is returned to the people of Te Wai Ohua or Mana Whenua. Moving on from Whanganui Atara, we have Hamilton Kirikiriroa. We have Auckland as well. So nationwide, now everyone is talking about it, which is putting a bit of pressure, not only on Fletcher the developer, but more so putting the word out there that we have created a petition which has been running for approximately 3 months, and that is our primary purpose of having the National Solidarity Actions to ensure that people are aware that we're submitting a petition to Parliament in addition to running a nationwide invitation for a festival on the land at Ihu Mātou to boost our petition. And it's been successful. It's just been amazing. So we're almost at 15,000 signatories since its inception approximately 3 months ago.
And what sort of form would you like to see the return of the land take? Should it go back into public ownership?
The ideal vision would be that the land is returned by a philanthropic exchange. So philanthropy, whatever that looks like, the land be returned to Mana Whenua, given that it was stolen during early Raupatu, or the confiscation of the land in 1863, the history of which I shared with you earlier in this interview. So we are saying we didn't create this mess. However, we've been cornered to ensure that first, a development doesn't progress. We've been successful to this point because 2016 December was when Fletcher had scheduled to commence construction. It's now 2019 and there are no structures on the whenua. So what that tells us is our presence as Mana Whenua and Tangata Whenua has been successful halting any construction. But as I mentioned, the ideal vision would have the land returned to Mana Whenua, who would then guide and instruct any other interested entities, parties or corporations as to how the land will look on the basis of what our tūpuna or ancestors had always intended. There have been discussions with various other people who are involved in this whawhai or battle that we, the Mana Whenua, purchased the land back from Fletcher's. We've considered ways to achieve that, although we are still solid on our vision of having that land return through philanthropy. Recently, New Zealand Herald ran a report that Fletcher's stated they will now put the land in question up for the public to purchase. So anyone else who was interested in purchasing the land from them, they would consider selling it off to someone else, if not Mana Whenua. Does that answer your question, Lachlan?
Yes. And the government seems to have remained pretty silent on the issue.
Absolutely.
Would you like to see more engagement from them in this process?
Yes, absolutely. Hence why we've considered very carefully ways to bring them closer to us. First, to talk about ways that we can engage and have our campaign spoken about in Parliament, because we know that that is where decisions can be made as to why this issue is a burning issue for New Zealand and all Indigenous people who are fighting similar battles. So we're virtually so close to achieving conversations with various politicians who are not necessarily in our eyes a government of the people, a people's government.
Mm.
It's actually a government of the people. We'd like to see things turn around. But we're using the basis of Te Tiriti and the treaty and the conflicting messages over the last 179 years that have brought us as Māori or tangata whenua to a position in 2019 where that bilateral agreement continues to be dishonoured. So the purpose of which we've created our petition is to seek intervention from local and national government, local being Auckland Council, and national government, so that they start to talk about this in Parliament and consider ways to assist us as Mana Whenua to reclaim this land so it remains a green space for historical purposes based on the early arrival of our people prior to the invasion or civilization and colonization of those lands.
Excellent. Is there anything else you'd like to add? Anything we haven't gone over that you feel? Yeah.
So March 2nd, in addition to our petition, which we will submit to Parliament on March the 12th, March the 2nd, which is only a fortnight away, we're having what we call Ihu Mātau Reclamation Festival. So with that festival, we have nationally acclaimed bands who are Māori, Pacifica, Pākehā, who all support our campaign and agree that the land should be returned. So a lot of these bands, which include Upper Hutt Posse, Energy Rising, Lady Six, Kiko, Tom Scott, they have all confirmed that they will play at our reclamation festival. They are playing for Aroha. They are not charging us any money to appear. But the purpose of our festival is to boost our petition and to invite people to connect to the whenua, so that they can feel the spiritual richness and also experience the thin veil, which is what Dave Art, one of our archaeologists, refers to the land, being a very thin veil between Te Ao Hurihuri, or today's realm, and the realm of our tūpuna, where all the spirits linger, where all our atua linger. We know that when people come to the whenua or the land, that they experience that spiritual connectedness, that thin veil, as Dave refers to, and that their entry to the festival is via koha. So they can pay whatever it is they think is due for their presence, one of the conditions of which they have to sign our petition. So these are some of the exciting things that we have happening. We envisage between, well, a large amount of people. I'm not going to put numbers on that in the interview because it could really blow out given the acts and the performers who have confirmed their attendance. So that's the 2nd of March on Ihu Mātau Quarry Road. It commences at 11 a.m. and concludes just before dark. So our kaupapa, as it has been, or our conditions that have always been in relation to holding the space at Ihu Mātau, is drug-free, alcohol-free, because the land is so sacred, or wāhi tapu, as we put it. Given that the bones or the kōiwi of our ancestors rest beneath the ground or the whenua, it's a cemetery similar to that of the larger public cemeteries throughout New Zealand, being a volcanic isthmus as well. There are many traditional practices that have taken place on the land that are quite sacred to Māori. So we maintain no drugs, no alcohol. We also keep each other safe, such as our children, who are tomorrow's generations. So coming back to what I mentioned, March the 2nd is one of our biggest events that we'll have happening. Although we are told that there may be a presence from New Zealand's constabulary, being the police. Whether they come or not, we will press forward with our festival. It's gone global, so we're expecting attendees from overseas. But this is also, as I've mentioned, in the build-up to submitting our petition to Parliament on March the 12th. So we want anyone and everybody to share the details of which on their Facebook pages, talk about it with your neighbours, speak to your bus drivers, talk to all your friends, tell them that there is a festival that's taking place, because people support the return of that land to its true owners, the guardians of Ihu Mātau.
Excellent. Thank you so much for your time this morning. That was enlightening. Great.
Fabulous. And I hope that everyone out there on radio waves joins us on Facebook. So our Facebook page is Save Our Unique Landscape, being an acronym for SOUL. So we are all soldiers, and this kaupapa is driven by mana whenua. So please, everyone, join us on Save Our Unique Landscape, SOUL. That is our main means of communicating on a global scale, everything that happens minute by minute. And we also share a lot of information about our events, such as March the 2nd and March the 12th. Look, it's been a real pleasure, Lachlan.
Yes, it's been, yeah, great. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And enjoy the rest of your day, and best of luck on March the 2nd.
Oh, me koe hoki. Thank you so much for taking the time to be respectful and to listen and understand the plight of not just Māori people, but the treaty partners, Te Tiriti, who should have always coexisted peacefully, and proof of which isn't the case today, although we are garnering more support from good treaty partners, whom we're hopeful Fletchers will be part of those good treaty partners too. So thank you once again, Lachlan. No mai hoki mai anō.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.